Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
The gathering on Signs of Life Radio, and tonight's discussion is going to be a book discussion about afterlife encounters, ordinary people, extraordinary experiences, written by an archangel. And this was a forerunner. Diane was one of the first to do, you know, research and brought to light just how prevalent these afterlife encounters are. And if you'd like to share one tonight, you can give us a call at 888-627-6008. Tonight's sponsor is the Comlock Center. You can find them on the web at Comlock, K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Tom cannot make it tonight, but Melissa is here and Fran is here.
Hey, Melissa.
And
hi, folks.
One of the perks of hosting a radio show is I get to wish my wife a happy anniversary.
I'll wish one back to you. Happy anniversary. Today's the day. How many years, folks?
42 years.
It's an interesting day. It also happens to be two of our certified mediums' birthdays,
yes.
Kim Russo and Catherine Nidell. So let's shout out to Kim and Catherine, also authors. They seem to have a lot in common, Geminis. So.
That's wonderful. Well, happy birthday to all of them and both of you. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
So we have lots to talk about. So why don't you get us caught up and so we can get started on the main discussion.
Okay. So first, a reminder to all of our listeners, please check the events page on our website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Just to let our listeners know what else they might be missing that's coming up this weekend on June 11th, we have the Visionary Explorers Group that's free and the Miami, Florida Afterlife Discussion Group. They're both on Saturday at 2 p.m., and both of them are free. So it's interesting that they're both at exactly the same time. One is online, one is in person. We did have a super-duper webinar last night on induced after-death communications with Dr. Alan Botkin. Thank you, Dr. Botkin. There will be no scheduled webinar for July, but you can sign up already for the August webinar with Dr. Claude Swanson, New Science Helps Explain the Afterlife, Where is Heaven? And this is going to be a very, very interesting presentation. And just as a reminder to everybody, this isn't those usual webinars where you just sit back and you listen and then you go home with all this information. The last part of the webinar, we open up the questions to the attendees so they get to engage directly with the presenter and ask whatever questions they want. So the webinars take their own form and they're guided by our attendees. So everybody sign up and let's see what we get with Claude in August. There are still spots available for our annual July grief retreat, where only 50 guests come together to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Joe Scheel, Janet Nohavik, and Joe Peretta, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. People have attended this yearly event from around the globe, and many return year after year for the new and special experiences. Please be sure before making your reservations, as we must maintain a no-refund policy. Also, as a final reminder, 38 of the 50 spots have been taken, mostly by attendees seeking single rooms. So we are out of rooms on site. We have included on the events page a link to a list of nearby hotels, and those staying at the hotels should reserve their spaces as commuters, which does not include the cost of the room, and you'll pay significantly less. Our first annual mediumship convention is all set for the weekend of November 11th through 13th. And again, like our grief retreat, we are enjoying an early round of reservations. Like our original afterlife conference, this is another first of its kind, a convention totally dedicated to the world of mediumship, run by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, taught by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums, and spirit communication conducted by Forever Family Foundation certified mediums. Reservations can be made on our website, and as always, keep in mind our no refund policy before making your reservations. And please, please, please help us keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. There's one on every single page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. So we depend on our supporters and their tiniest donations. Everything helps us to keep all of our programs going. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Great Not Profits, and Wellzoo. Just remember to name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice in each of those situations. Visit foreverfamilyfoundation.org for all event links, information, and registration. And lastly, if you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Okay, Bob, back to you.
All right, and we're going to be talking about Diane Arcangel's book, Afterlife Encounters. If you haven't read it, it's not a new book. I think it was published in 2005, but it's still very relevant, and it was one of the original books about afterlife encounters. So now, Diane named it Afterlife Encounter, and she gave a different definition of it. So without referring to the book, I mean, if I were to ask you, Melissa, how would you define like an afterlife encounter just off the top of your head?
Well, the word encounter makes me think of that movie, Encounters of the Third Kind.
Right.
So I would think it's something mysterious and alien not alien like aliens, but foreign to my general concepts about things. But the word afterlife encounters. So, could it be meeting up with your loved ones?
Well, I mean, that's a pretty good definition of meeting up with your loved ones, and maybe describing how you meet up. So, you want to chime in on that, Fran? How would you define an afterlife encounter? I mean, it could go by many names, but
I think it's a perfect name, and it's very descriptive of what goes on. You come in contact in a variety of different ways with a deceased person whose consciousness obviously still survives, and that's your immediate proof that there's an afterlife.
That's pretty much it. I mean, Diane's definition is pretty simple. Any sense of being connected to or in the presence of a discarnate entity. It's pretty broad, you know, we know it could be a simple sense of presence, or it could be, you know, a visual thing or an auditory thing or a feeling thing or a smelling thing, but it all falls into that category. Diane gives some specific examples and definitions, and we're going to get into that and much more right after our break. So stay with us, and we will be back in a few minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death, and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
A Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to the Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about Diane Archangel's book, Afterlife Encounters, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Experiences. And one friend of the foundation, who you've heard before, Roman Karpyshka, just joined us. So Roman's going to join in on the conversation. So we mentioned, you know, how she defines an afterlife encounter. And in her book, she gives examples. So she says they fall into five categories. So let's see if we agree with them.
Okay.
The five categories are, one, personal. So that could be, you know, a deceased relative, a pet, a friend, a colleague, a neighbor, or anyone familiar to the experiencer.
I'm glad she included the pets. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Strongly. Two, she lists a spiritual figure, because a lot of people report, Jesus, Buddha, God, angels, saints, so that's a category. I was surprised that she included a historical or famous figure. A lot of people, and there are a lot of accounts in her book of people actually encountering, you know, Winston Churchill, Mother Teresa, Marilyn Monroe, not to put her in the same category, Mickey.
Why not?
Why not?
Did she do anything bad?
We can get into that, but... And four, the unknown. So it's a discarnate entity that is unfamiliar to the experiencer, and we all know that happens. And five, objects and non-human species. So she's talking about things like telephones and computers, you know, like EVP, answering machines, animals, butterflies.
Cardinals?
And, well...
Signs.
And afterlife encounters appear in one or two forms, ghosts or apparitions. So I'm always surprised. We talked last week about another study that was done with Orlando Haraldson, and the vast majority of the encounters were visual. And also, when Diane found that there's a tremendous number of visual encounters, I was surprised because most of the time it's not, as far as like people telling us, you know. I mean, of course, people do see their deceased loved ones, but more often it's signs and dream visits and, you know, EVP and things like that. So
I think that's just a result of the sheer numbers of those people who are willing to verbalize their experiences. I think once they've seen a deceased person, I think the person who saw them is more likely to not share it than to share it.
Right, and Diane does get into that in the book, for the reasons that people don't report it, and there's many reasons, fear of being judged and religious and so forth. I'm going to give you a little quiz.
Okay.
So in Diane's survey, which was a 5-year international study, she had 596 respondents who reported having an afterlife encounter of any type. If you were to guess, what percentage of people said that the afterlife encounter brought them some degree of comfort and the comfort did not diminish over time? So what percentage out of that 596 said it brought them comfort?
I would guess it would be a pretty high percentage. Unlike popular culture, which likes to depict afterlife encounters as being spooky or, you know, unknown, I think it brings a lot more comfort than that. I think it's completely different from what they portray it in the media as being. So if out of the 596, I would venture 400. Like a very vast percentage.
Okay, so that would something like 70-75%. What would you say, Melissa?
I'd go like 85%.
Right. Fran?
I hadn't come up with a number. I was just ready to listen to Melissa, but I was focusing on something rather high.
Okay, well, you're right, but you're not as right. It is very high, 98%.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, you said, Bob, that brought them comfort and stayed with them.
Right.
So that doesn't surprise me, because we know that feeling you get when you have had contact. It doesn't dissipate as far as I know.
No.
Yeah, I'd love to hear the explanations of the 2% that didn't have
it.
Ah, you're reading my mind, because that was what we were going to go into. Of course, then she was interested in, you know, what among the 2% that didn't, you know, what were their thoughts? Most of them mentioned that they felt depressed because these people, their afterlife encounters came in the form of readings with mediums. And the reason that they felt depressed was that now they felt they had to depend on someone else for contact, rather than never being able to communicate directly.
I'm with them on that. So Diane included an afterlife encounter to include a third party, rather than a direct encounter.
Yeah.
Maybe that might fall under the category of wanting more, maybe.
Right, because yes, I agree with Roman. That's it. You want more and more and more, but when you've had your own direct encounter, you seem to you graduate to a new level of understanding.
Yeah, actually, I'm surprised that it was only, 2%, because that's something that I think about often, you know, that people, and we've discussed this, you know, people can become dependent upon, you know, third parties and mediums and go back and back and back, and they set themselves up for disappointment, you know, when their loved one doesn't come through. The ultimate goal, I would think, is to be able to communicate on your own. You know, when I say be able to communicate, maybe you're not initiating it, maybe the person in spirit is initiating it, so what could be better than them getting through to you directly? So.
I know, too, that it might make a difference if you had a reading with a medium. First of all, in a group setting like we've witnessed, where you only get a smidge and then you're a little disappointed because others might get more, but you got something. But then if you had recorded it, or even better, videotaped it and watched it over and over, I know family members of mine do that from time to time. They revisit it, and they hear new stuff, and, you know, it just sort of is rejuvenating. But we don't know in this study if it was simply having the experience or, if, you know, and that was it, one-time thing.
Always a good idea to record stuff, because you're going to miss a lot during the original reading.
Yeah.
You're so inspired by what you hear that, I mean, I'm sure when you revisit it on a cassette or whatever you recorded it, you're going to pick up things that you didn't pick up the first time.
Right, and then also, not only do you miss a lot, but sometimes you misinterpret what you heard. So you could put things into perspective.
And in Diane's book, later on, when she recounts a reading she had with one of the mediums we've all heard of, not certified by the Forever Family Foundation, that the message coming through was quite insistent. And she was like, no, we didn't know anybody by that name. But me, and I can't recall now if she recorded it and later identifies the person. But when you record it, then later on you're hitting yourself on the head going, of course, why didn't I think
that? And one of the things that she does in the book is she gives, she puts transcripts. So I assume that she did record it, because she was giving verbatim transcripts of the readings. And then, you know, rating it for accuracy. And that was good because, you know, we kind of copied that once, and we did a little experiment on our own. But we took a reading that, you know, the sitter scored as a, you know, like 95% accurate, you know, and would give it a 6 out of 6 in terms of a rating score. And we published it, if you recall, years ago, we published it in the newsletter, and we asked members to look at the reading and score it. We gave them some scoring procedures as if it was a reading given to them, because that we wanted to see the argument. We wanted to measure the argument that all mediums are doing, are giving general statements that can be attributed to a lot of people. And the results were pretty much what we thought. The vast majority of people, you know, gave it a very, very poor score, like 90%, gave it a matter of fact, I think 95% scored it as not evident, that spirit communication was not evident. You know, there wasn't anything there to lead them to believe that communication was taking place. So that was pretty effective because it showed, it kind of dismantled that argument.
So you were saying it wasn't that they read that and said, no, it's not mine, doesn't pertain to me, or they read it and said, this is not very evidential. No wonder it was scored.
Yeah, well, because the instructions were them to make believe that this was a reading given to them by the medium.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were more...
Just to clarify, because I don't think that you're understanding what Melissa's asking. She's saying, so they were saying it was not evidential. Wasn't evidential to them.
Them.
To them.
Because
them.
They were asked to score it as if it were their loved one coming through.
Okay.
So what I think Bob is saying is that, therefore, what is true is that this reading done for the person who scored it high was evidential for them, and not as expected, so vague and so broad that everybody would have scored it high.
Okay, got it.
It probably goes to show that there's some very specific details that were in that reading that it would be very, very hard for that to establish a high score in the general population.
Exactly, because this was a particular reading where there were a lot of, if we were scoring it, we'd score it as significant hits, so it was very specific, you know, names, dates, and things of that nature. If you recall from reading the book, as I forgot it when I reread it the other day, you know, we're always curious how people started to get interested in these things, especially researchers like Diane and so forth. And she had a personal experience. Her family, I don't know if you remember this, owned a dry cleaning store. And her father owned it for many, many years, and they had a lot of workers that were there, you know, for decades. And one particular worker a longtime employee. I don't know, he was there like 30 years. Eventually, after Diane's father passed, Diane and her husband bought the dry cleaners, and this employee stayed. And eventually, this employee, she goes into great detail that this was his whole life. He was a single guy. He didn't have any outside interests. His whole life was working in this dry clean. And he passed away. And ever since, he has been seen at his workstation in that dry clean multiple times. And it even continues to this day. The dry cleaner has been sold a few times, but the people still report, that he's still at his workstation.
Isn't that something?
So there's an example of a now, I, this would be the question here.
Oh,
is, yeah, I mean, so the question there is whether or not this would be in the ghost, the ghost category where it's kind of place memory. He's not interactive with people; just see him.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
He's not interactive. When we talk about these visual occurrences, there's one, a striking one in her book. I'll read it. The title is Papa Roger Save Me, and this is somebody that wrote into the survey. I'm writing for my 16-year-old niece, Katie Allred. Her grandfather, my father, died in April 2002. Katie was probably his favorite grandchild, and he adored her. In June, Katie's best friend, Lindy Lou, picked Katie up to go out for the evening. They had gotten only about a mile down our country road when Lindy Lou lost control of the car on a curve. The car spun around backwards, went down an embankment and into the woods. Katie was unharmed, but her friend was killed. Where Katie had been sitting, it looked like someone had put their hands over her and sealed her from the wreck. We are talking about a space of maybe 24 inches. The rest of the car around that space was either torn up or gone. Katie said that when the car stopped, it felt as if someone lifted her out. With woods all around her, she had no sense of direction and didn't know which way to go. She was just standing there when she suddenly saw her grandfather, the deceased grandfather. He was glowing and pointing in one direction, so she went that way. Katie came out on the road and flagged down a passing car. She told us that night, Papa Roger saved me. Our family believes this, especially after seeing the car. Katie should not have survived this wreck, but she did, and without any injury.
Wow.
So, classic example. That, doesn't that remind you of that news story that was last year about that?
The baby upside down in the car.
Yeah.
Exactly,
what?
Yeah.
So I think that, there are a great many reports about people being saved, which goes to, and it's always, nobody else sees the person that's saving them except this perceiver,
I would put that in the same category of the NDEer who crossed over and then was sent back saying it's not your time. So those people who have these people saving them are saving them for a purpose. They still need to be here to do something.
And the doing something, there was another book I had read where I think a fellow was in a frat house and the building caught on fire and he found himself out in a yard and he could not possibly conceive how he got out of the room he had been in. And I can't remember all the details, but he continued his life. Nothing extraordinary happened to him in his life, but he felt like he was saved for a reason. So do you think, the reason could be just very mundane? I mean, not mundane, but ordinary. Like, just to live your life, just to raise a family. Nothing spectacular like, creating a cure for cancer or something.
Or maybe he was going to father a child that was going to become president of a country and change the direction of that country.
But would it have to be even on that grand scale?
Isn't grand. He could probably leave the earth once that child is born.
But even if the child wasn't.
Okay.
I'm just saying. But yeah. That's a good,
Well, you know, it raises an interesting point, because there's a lot of people that hear stories like that and they say, wait a second, I lost a loved one, you know, I lost a loved one in an accident, or I lost a loved one, you know, to illness. And if our guardian angels, you know, are looking after us, or our deceased relative, yeah, and interceding, why didn't they intercede for my loved one? You know, I mean, that's what the question.
I think Roman has good insight into that.
What do you think,
yeah,
Roman?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, after my son passed away in a tragic drowning accident, you know, I was like, okay, why didn't anybody spiritual alert me to the fact that my son was right in the next room drowning? And for years and years, I thought that way. And then I realized that there was a reason behind it. His time came and it went, and he was put here to, I guess, to teach me a lesson. Without that incident, I would have never, you know, I was not on the path to get into the spiritual notion of things and the learning and helping out spiritually with people that are in need of help. I think that the right question to ask is not, why didn't somebody interfere? Why didn't I get alerted? It's more like, okay, what did this happen? Why did this happen? And what am I supposed to do with this information now? How can I learn from it and pass the knowledge on or help out in some way? I think that's the better way, and it makes you feel better to think that way rather than the other way.
Right.
Right, and I don't think it's just the thinking, Roman. I think it's if we understand from all of the data and all of the stories and all of the research about survival of consciousness, the knowledge that they haven't gone anyplace is what...
Right.
Really has the meaning, because they're fine. And in every instance, when they have the opportunity to let us know, their first message to us is, I'm fine, I'm happy, this is where I'm supposed to be, this is where you're going to be too.
Yeah, it's very hard, very hard concept to reason in physical terms. I mean, we know from...
Yeah, I still grapple with it.
But you look at the evidence from near-death experiencers, right? I mean, consistently, the ones that do come back, you know, and obviously those are the people that we hear from, are told that it's not your time, you know, which they don't quite understand, because they want, you know, the experience will tell you that they don't want to come back, you know, it's great where they are, leave me alone. So, so that question of it's not their time, you know, that there's a greater plan in place that's hidden, and it's very difficult for us to perceive it.
And it could be as simple as them, they're behind the wheel. Like that time I was going around a bend, and I think a car kind of cut me off and made me stop. And had I not stopped, there was a bicyclist coming right across the path, and I... You know, that guy wasn't stopping. I don't really recall if that's how it played out, but it was being in a certain place at a certain time that stopped something else from happening, which happens to people all the time. So maybe it's just...
I got one that just happened to me exactly like that a couple of days ago. I was actually riding on my motorcycle to work. Two squirrels crisscrossed in front of me. Like, so I figured, okay, one of the squirrels made it across. The other one got hit by the car, went sailing vertically into the air about 50 feet, then landed, you know, dead. So I'm like, okay, I better slow down. As I'm thinking that, this huge deer jumps in front of me. This huge deer.
Wow.
Is it just, you know, coincidence? I don't know. I don't think so.
It's crazy.
So you have squirrel guardian angels, Roman.
Really, just sacrifice your lives,
yeah,
Roman.
And you are a special person.
Will you cross over, Roman? That squirrel's going to be waiting for you.
he's going to be looking for some nuts. That's for sure.
On that note,
not mine, I hope.
We're going to go. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, I want to talk about. If you think that there are certain personality types of people that are more prone to have encounters, because Diane discusses that in the book. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, The Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Starseed Gems Studios in Cocoa, Florida fuses cremation ashes within art glass, making beautiful stones. The ashes are visible in the darkness and resemble a beautiful night sky. Starseed Gems, developed by the parents of a young man who passed away, are set in hand-sculpted silver and gold settings. Prices start at $150. Visit www.starseedgems.com or call 321-632-7770. That's www.starseedgems.com or 321-632-7770.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, .com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
And welcome back to The Gathering. We're talking about afterlife encounters in Diane Archangel's book, Afterlife Encounters, Ordinary People, Extraordinary Experiences. So before we went to the break, I mentioned that Diane in the book was curious about if there were certain types of personality profiles that would lend itself to receiving these after-death communications. And she did find, what she did is she used a standardized personality test that is used in the psychology field, the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And
the four quadrants.
Yeah, and what she found was that, and it's, you know, and I guess that the personality types would be a lot of left brain thinkers, and you know that we were just talking about, you know, off the air. But the people that were a combination of being intuitive and feeling personalities, when they scored high on both of those, they accounted for 96% of the encounters. So that there must be something to it. You know, I guess they, you know, an intuitive, maybe artistic, empathic type of person would be more likely to get an afterlife encounter than some left brain stoic, you know, personality. So it makes sense to me.
Well, it sounds like you're describing all of our mediums who have those qualities and spirit. Maybe they're more open to receiving the information.
Sometimes
you get these scientists that are brilliant in their fields, yet they also have mediumistic abilities.
That's true. I don't think that, you know, one personality type excludes the other. You can.
There's always exceptions to the rule.
Yeah, you could be a analytical thinker and still exhibit intuitive ability. You know, I don't think they're mutually exclusive. We've heard a lot of reports over the years about people intervening from the other side, sometimes through telephone calls or through voice phenomena. Here's an account from the book. It's entitled, "Your Wife Left a Voice Message." On April 25, 2001, I had a procedure done with an experimental device called an angiojet and magic stent to support a deteriorated artery in my heart. Doctors scheduled my follow-up appointment for May 15th. The next week, on May 1st, my wife, Ellie, suddenly died. Then on Monday, May 10th, 10 days after her death, I received a call from my cardiologist's office. The receptionist said, "Joe Diaca?" "Yes," I confirmed. "We're changing your appointment to tomorrow morning," she said. "But I already have an appointment scheduled for May 15th. She said, "Well, we updated it because your wife left a voice message last night asking that the doctor see you sooner. She said, you don't look well." During my examination the next day, doctors found that I was having life-threatening arrhythmia, which had to be treated immediately. I was so distraught over Ellie's death that I had not realized how close I was to having a heart attack, and she had not rescheduled my appointment. Had she not, you know, rescheduled my appointment, it brings me comfort to know that Ellie was watching over me, loving and protecting me. So there's, this is not the first time that we've heard accounts like this. It's pretty often. Imagine, though, how difficult that must be for his wife on the other side to get that call through.
Well, I'm
not only that, but to obtain the knowledge that, you know, he has heart problems. Like, all of a sudden, she's a heart expert. You know, it's amazing that she could obtain that knowledge and act upon it in the first place.
That's true.
I think it has something to do with time.
Yeah, I think that we see things, we see more of the bigger picture when we cross over. Not that we become all-knowing, but I think there are certain aspects of our existence that become clearer to us than in the physical dense world. And but I keep thinking just the mechanics of it. You know, it's just, I want to practice now for being able to do it. I have enough time getting a cell phone call to get through. You know, you're going interdimensionally.
Well, it's reminding me of your doctor, Frank, was that his name?
Yeah.
And
yeah, he was also a doctor that received a phone call from his deceased father. Yeah, so it's
And they do say the electronics are easier to. I don't know about creating a voice, but EVP.
Right. Diane gives her own definitions of evidence. You know, in other words, what constitutes evidence of survival beyond bodily death? And she lists, one, the apparition stated information that was unknown by the person who experienced the encounter. That makes sense because, you can't make the argument that they're making it up. They knew it and it happened because they were unaware of it. So, in other words, you get you see an apparition, that apparition gives you information that you didn't know when you later find it out to be true.
Mentally, telepathically, or it speaks?
Either way. I mean, most of the time, it's people describe not hearing actual physical voices, but yet understanding what was being said, more of a telepathic process.
Did you hear about the people that won the mega lotto not too long ago, that the numbers came to them in a dream, and that's how they won the $1 billion jackpot, and they split it amongst the family? It's quite amazing that happened. It was the last big mega, what is it, the Powerball, the last big Powerball drawing.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
It was this black lady who said it came to her in a dream. She bought two tickets for two drawings, same numbers, boom, the second drawing, numbers came.
Wow.
Just like that. She's praising the Lord. It was on TV and everything.
So, yeah. Go a phone number.
Like that would happen to me.
Did she recall in the dream, like, did the numbers just come to her, or someone specific told her?
Somebody
about
specific in a dream told her. I think it was a deceased relative that came to her in the dream, told her exactly the numbers. This is not a person that played the same numbers every week. It was the first time she played it, and boom, done.
Yeah, when you hear accounts like that, so usually when people say they dream of the numbers, you know, one explanation would be that, you know, they tapped into the Akashic Records, or whatever you want to call the storehouse of information, and or it was a precognitive kind of thing. They moved into the future, they saw the drawing, and they saw the numbers, and then they go and play it. But in this case, as Roman described it, the woman said that a deceased relative came to her in a dream and gave her that seems like spirit intervention, you know?
It sure
now,
does.
You know, people, the mediums always say that they can't use their abilities, you know, for personal gain like that. But here, maybe the woman was destitute.
She wasn't using her gift. This was a deceased relative that came to her. I mean, for all we know, she was down in
the woman, I think what Bob was trying to say was that she would maybe she's the type of woman that would put that to good use in the future or something, you know?
And that's why the person in spirit. But then, you know, we hear a lot of accounts of people who pass on and they try to get a message through to their loved ones about where a will was hidden or where the money is buried or that kind of stuff, because it's important to them. So,
well, maybe it was predestined. That she won this lotto, and this was just the method by which she was going to pick out the correct numbers, that somewhere along this trickle-down effect of the good that she did with the money is going to produce something else wonderful in the world.
Mm. Let's hope so.
Another example she gives is the apparition reported a current event that was unknown by the perceiver and later verified. The apparition autonomously manipulated a physical object. So that's, you know, we hear about that all the time. Things move, apports, things of that nature. And the apparition exhibited a purpose that was extraneous to the recipient. And then, you know, she gives examples of all these. You know, the most important thing, though, that I think Diane wanted to get out of the book, and bear in mind that Diane was a hospice chaplain. She was a psychotherapist, and she also was a director of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross Center, and she worked closely with Elizabeth. And she said, Diane said, that I have never sat with a dying patient who was not in the accompaniment of an apparition as their time grew near. No one ever dies alone. That's a strong statement.
That's very comforting.
I never sat, you know, somebody with 30, 40 years working with the dying.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. And do you remember also from the book about that story she told about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, where Elizabeth was in an elevator?
Oh, this is great. Yeah.
And a woman walked into the elevator, and Elizabeth knew that she was trying to go run through her mind where she knew her, because she knew she knew her, and she was trying to figure it out. And then a woman looks at her and says, "You don't remember me, do you?" And then she said, "No." I said, I think the name was Shapiro. I'm Mrs. Shapiro." And Elizabeth said, "Oh, yes, you died last year." And just went on with the conversation. And being a researcher and a scientist, Elizabeth had enough sense. She said, "Would you do me a favor?" She took out a piece of paper, and she said, "Would you write your name on this piece of paper so I could show it to my chaplain, so that they'll know that it was you?" And she has the physical, paper with the signature on it,
My
so,
goodness.
You know, that's, and he was a world-renowned, expert on grief and a medical doctor, and she was certainly open.
She had the presence of mind to pull out a piece of paper and a pen.
Yeah.
Wow.
What's also interesting in the book, and I missed so much the first time I read it, Diane categorizes mediums. So the first category, she put a sensitive. I hear that sometimes from people, they refer to mediums as sensitive. What do you think
that would be would that be like in terms of clairaudience and perceiving with the senses? Some are, see things, some hear things, some feel things.
Her point was that a sensitive is not a medium. A sensitive is a psychic. She puts them in the category that they're not mediums. They just pick up, information, but they can't communicate with the dead. The other category she calls them pseudo-mediums. And I think Fran has a different term for pseudo-mediums.
Wannamedium?
What do you mean? Wannamedium.
Wannabe mediums, yeah.
Right. So they could be, imposters or frauds, or they could be well-meaning psychics. They want to do good. Their ego takes over, and they think that they can communicate with the dead, but they can't.
I think what happens with these people is they become so excited that they could do something that's out of the usual that right away they decide that they have a special gift and that they can help people and they can do that. They just push it all the way when it's really just a normal thing.
Something very current, and I think it just started last night, America's Got Talent. There was a woman on there with a gentleman, and she was being shown anything in the audience that somebody had in their hand, she was able to tell you what it was. So it makes you want to stay tuned, like, what's going on here?
Right.
That's a great show.
And the third category is medium practitioners, the ones we're familiar with that are experienced clinicians, and they can, present evidence. So, well, I think we've reached the end of our time. Fran has a few things that she would like to say.
Okay. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Karen Gould, Stanley Mullen, Glenna Irwin, Michael Tim, David Hayes, Marianne Pierschka, Donna Mello, Matt Mello, Fred Feinstein, James Rafferty, Doreen Malloy, Diane Archangel, Joan Lipke, Irma Marchand, and Vince Matea. Now let us, as one consciousness, give our energy of loving thought by praying like this: to love one another, to treat others as we would like to be treated, to forgive others and return love for hate, kindness for anger, to spread this feeling to everyone, to our fellow man, as well as the earth and its environment. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it. Good night, everyone.